Welcome to Minnesota Reads here on KUMD. Our guest this morning is someone that I've been happy to call friend for a number of years, and was it a surprise to me that she wrote a book, and what a wonderful opportunity to talk with her about it. Virginia Wright Peterson joins us on the phone this morning, and she's the author of a book called Women of Mayo Clinic, The Founding Generation. Hey, Ginny, good morning. Nice to have you along with us.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for having me.
You and I haven't been on the air together in, gosh, I'm not even going to say how many years it's
been.
Yeah,
let's not admit that.
What I think is so cool was that I thought to myself, what a great book to talk about during Women's History Month. The book actually came about because of Women's History Month. Tell us about that. It's a great story.
Oh, it absolutely did. I was working at Mayo Clinic in Education in Rochester, and some colleagues and I decided for Women's History Month to put together a little, like, trivia game in the form of, like, Jeopardy, right? And I offered to go down to the historical suite on the third floor of the Plummer Building there and look for a little information on women in the early days of Mayo Clinic. And I expected to find just the handful that we had already heard about. Mother Alfred, who was there when the cyclone hit Rochester in 1883 and convinced Dr. William Worrell Mayo to start a hospital. And there are a few others, a first nurse and the first librarian and editor we had heard about. But I was just truly shocked when the staff at the archive just brought me long lists, files, boxes of information on women I had never heard of before. And again, I had worked at Mayo Clinic for a number of years. I'd been born at St. Mary's Hospital there. I was really surprised that so many women were involved in the early years at Mayo Clinic.
When you start talking about women as doctors, as scientists, as nurses, as researchers, do you find that the same thing happened with them in terms of the historical record and in terms of the way they were treated, that we're so accustomed to hearing about women, dismissed, paternalized, or because they were scientists, doctors, nurses, were they accorded a little bit more respect and a little bit more, print time?
Well, the Mayos, the father and his sons, Dr. Will and Dr. Charlie, really had a high regard for women, both in their professional and in their personal lives. They did not shy away from intelligent, strong women at all, and welcomed them into the practice, and married them, and so they had quite a bit of respect in the organization. And I would say it wasn't necessarily limited to just the scientists. There were secretarial staff that were integrally involved in establishing the medical record and surgical indexing system that became crucial for Mayo's success as a group practice.
So as you were researching, first of all, you were surprised that there were all of these remarkable women that you had never heard about, and the assumption being that other people probably hadn't heard about either. Can you pick a woman or an incident that you learned about that surprised you most, that really made you put your research material down and just stop and think for a minute?
Oh, well, there would have been, so many. There are 40 or so that I focus on in the book. And, I guess maybe the social workers really surprised me. At the very, very, in the 1920s, when Mayo started having patients come, they had patients coming from maybe the early 1900s, from all over the country. And so all people from different cultures and religions were coming, and the caregivers weren't sure how to really care for them, to respect their customs and to take care of them holistically. Over half of them came to Mayo Clinic without anyone accompanying them. Again, coming from farm communities and things like that, people couldn't stop and escort someone to Mayo Clinic when they needed treatment. And so out of that, the social work department arose to take care of Jewish patients, to take care of children that were put on a train from places like Montana with a little note pinned to them saying, please be good to this little girl. She's on her way to Mayo Clinic, and she'd be 12 years old. So I, when the social workers sort of as a group really impressed me in terms of that dimension of taking care of the psychological and financial and all of the non-medical needs of the patient very early on.
And it was fascinating to read about after the wars, the way the social workers stepped in and helped even veterans in many instances find new trades or help them heal psychologically, because perhaps they were so gravely injured that whatever it is they had done for a living before the war, they couldn't do afterwards, and they kind of helped them in finding a new vocation.
Absolutely. The occupational health field sort of grew out of the social work team at Mayo Clinic, as did the patient library, the vets, the concept of bibliotherapy, reading as a form of healing, was coming out at that time. And I believe World War I was the first time that that was really kind of a focus, with the service members being given books and things like that to help them cope.
Maybe I'm reading between the lines, but it's kind of my job as a part-time psychiatrist and full-time radio announcer. But the book subtitle says The Founding Generation. Is that what those in the literary biz call foreshadowing? Is there another book on the way?
Yeah, I do get that question quite a bit. Well, you know, an interesting thing sort of happened. The book ends in 1943, primarily because most of the people that I focus on have passed away by that time. But it is also a time when the women, especially at the sort of physician level, are kind of winding down. During the Depression, which is a very hard time for Mayo as well as the rest of the nation, some of the single women physicians and that left Mayo Clinic, leaving the jobs for people who were supporting families. And they established successful practices in the East Coast and in other places. But the number of women sort of declined during the 30s, and interestingly did not, you know, they did not reappear in the 40s or the 50s or actually even in the 60s. And I think some of this was a little bit of a backlash after World War II to women in non-traditional fields in general, sort of a backlash to the Rosie the Riveters, you know, when people realized, oh, women can weld and do all sorts of things. My speculation is that there was they just were really being pushed back into the traditional fields of like teaching and nursing.
Yeah, there'll be no more of that, darn it.
Yeah, exactly. So the story is a little thin in some of those decades. And then in 1982, believe it or not, that's when I started at Mayo Clinic, and I'm a little concerned about attempting to write a story that I'm in. I'm not sure that I can bring the objectivity to it. So,
well, do say, and this was fascinating to me because, of course, we grew up in Rochester in the 70s, and that women did not start to go back to medical school in droves until the 70s, and that was only after a class action by Women's Equity Action League, and they brought a class action suit against medical schools and said, get with the program. I think you've got to write this.
it definitely needs to be written, and I'll continue to consider it. But like I said, I think just because I enter it and would have my own sort of perceptions and possibly biases, that someone, it should be written, but I'm not sure I'm the one to do it.
Well, Jenny, it was wonderful to talk with you again. The book was absolutely marvelous. It's a fascinating read. It's called Women of Mayo Clinic, The Founding Generation by Virginia Wright Peterson. And thanks so much for joining us this morning. Hey, it was great to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me.
This is Minnesota Reads here on Northland Morning. And Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.